All right. So anyway, I was just going through the weather and noticed that there was a tornado right next to the town that I used to live in the Oregon coast, which is kind of amazing. A little place called Manzanita, which is it's real nice country, very, very wet there, of course, but it's also great. It's got great surfing there and some pretty good fishing, but it's a little bit rugged. They have a golf course that is up on the side of the mountain when you're driving north up the coast, and this golf course must have the most spectacular view in the world. Anyway, all right, so we just found out that Julian Assange's internet connection was intentionally severed by a state party actor, so it could be somebody acting on their own. He lives in London. He lives in the Ecuadorian, I think in the Ecuadorian embassy. Has lived there for 4 years. But it could be somebody from Hillary's, you know, group that contacted them and claimed that he was doing crimes or what have you. But they have cut it off. So there is a contingency plan. And the contingency plan means that he's got backup servers. What you see a lot of times in a more sophisticated internet server operations is what's called a mirror. You have the same information on more than one place. So if one goes down, the other is available. And Julian Assange has undoubtedly given his plans to somebody else to get it out. I'm sure that he saw this coming. Now, in the race, 40% say tensions with family and friends have been caused by Trump. I mean, I bring it up as a joke, but I really don't argue with people about Trump. Well, I guess I do argue with people about it. I don't normally talk about politics with people because I know a lot of people are bothered by that. You've got politics, religion, sex, the three things that you're not supposed to bring up, the three most interesting subjects, of course, you're not supposed to talk to people about. Some idiot thought of this cliche years ago, so now so many people have been influenced by it. But sometimes somebody will come up and ask me about my opinion, but I occasionally bring it up. I brought it up to my sister, and now she hates me, but. So there is something I want to get into later. Let me see how many other stories I need to get through here before. All right, let's take a break and come back and talk a little bit about WikiLeaks. And we'll do some New Mexico news, too, of course. But I've got some weather for you first. And I still can't believe this place had a tornado, but probably the most exciting thing that's happened there for years. Wonder how much damage. It's a very small town. And it was like, I think, 3 miles from where I used to live, which was the most unbelievable views and land that you've ever seen. I lived right off a pretty major river up in Oregon. Although major rivers, I guess, would be Columbia, but
really sick of the water, the wind, and in some cases seeing those waves crashing.
This is up in Pacific Northwest,
especially early on Friday when those water spouts came ashore in Manzanita as well as Oceanside. And unfortunately, you've got an unsettled weather pattern that continues for the next couple of days. We've got drier and calmer weather that gets in mid to late week, but for today, it's still going to be pretty blustery out there, very wet, very windy, and of course, we're definitely adding on to the snowfall for so many places as well. Let's talk about the rainfall amounts that we're still going to see. Most locations picking up only an additional 2 to 3 inches, but on top of what you've already seen, on top of already saturated ground, that'll likely mean more trees coming down with those gusty winds. So be very, very cautious, especially around the power lines. In terms of the mountain snow still to come, yeah, we're going to pick up on some locations anywhere from 1 foot to 2 feet of snow by the time this is all said and done across sections of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming.
All right, and now for some local weather. All right, so no rejoinder, what they call a rejoinder on the computer, no introduction to this part of the show. Coming back from a break, but don't let that throw you off. I'm still here, Kelly O'Connell, 6:44. All right, here, how much does the WikiLeaks dumps on Hillary Clinton's from her private emails hurt the mainstream media? Check this out. Chris Cuomo, whose brother is the governor of New York and whose father was the governor of New York, and he's just a television presenter.
Also interesting is, remember, it's illegal to possess these stolen documents. It's different for the media. So everything you learn about this, you're learning from us. And in full disclosure, let's take a look at what is in there and what it means. Joining us now, CNC.
You can't look at them, but we can. All right, here is a little bit on what's in the wiki. By the way, that's totally wrong. That guy is a real jackalope. But here is here's some revelations from Hillary's latest WikiLeaks dump.
The newest WikiLeaks email dump may leave a sour taste in the mouths of voters. The newest release of emails from Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta, shows the Clinton campaign lashing out at many groups, including the Democratic Party. Fox News chief national correspondent Ed Henry has a story.
Hillary Clinton campaigns publicly on a theme of stronger together.
I am reminded of what my friend Michelle Obama advised us all. When they go low, you go high.
Except a flood of emails suggest that in private, her advisors like to tee off on everyone, from Catholics to Latinos and Southerners. And as another 2,000 hacked emails emerged today from John Podesta's Gmail account, we also learned about behind-the-scenes infighting and outright hostility within Clinton's own inner circle. When New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio praised Bernie Sanders during the Democratic primary and again hedged on his eventual endorsement of Clinton, campaign manager Robbie Mook lashed out, writing, quote, "Wow, what a terrorist." Clinton's communications director Jennifer Palmieri piled on, responding, "Told you so." And Podesta also set his sights on one of Clinton's other closest advisors, Sid Blumenthal. Podesta ripping Blumenthal to a friend. "Sid is lost in his own web of conspiracies. I pay zero attention to what he says."
All right, so some of this stuff I really could care less about, but the one that I find interesting, I mean, I don't care if somebody trashes another person in email, but there is some information on how, and I think I've just got this in a article that I'll have to go back and get for you, but I'm going to come back and talk to you next hour about something that is kind of fascinating for me, a way to understand what's going on around us to make some sense of it. 41% of the people believe that the election could be overthrown by rigging. And I'm going to have to go read that article to see what exactly they're talking about. But I would, from my perspective, if the media puts out false information, doesn't fact check it, acts like it's a breaking story, like some, you know, foreign leader was assassinated or something, put it on that level, breaking news, another woman accuses Trump, they don't do any fact checking. And then it turns out the first couple of women who got up and said something were lying, and they know they're lying. They should put a halt to all arrests before they fact check them, because it's going to overturn the election. And the media is, everybody can see it now. The media doesn't even pretend to be unbiased anymore. Why? Because they're fighting to save America. But the person who's threatening America isn't Trump, it's Hillary. Clearly. We'll come back and talk about what happened with Haiti. 523-1450 to call in, 648 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll be right back. All right, so, man, I've got so many little clips here for you. Here is the blurred lines between the Clinton Foundation. Now, look, the Clinton Foundation was set up as a charity. And that's what Bill Clinton spends a lot of his time in. But doesn't really do a lot of charitable work. I don't know exactly what it does. but it's collected billions on the books and supposedly $100 billion off the books. But the Clintons were in charge of Haiti. Now, if Hillary really cares about the poor, there's no more poor people on earth than there is in Haiti. So what did she do to help those people? And if she was given, or let's put yourself in these shoes, if you were given $1 billion to help, or billions of dollars to help a group of people that had just gone through an extraordinary crisis, would that not be a test, what you did with that money, for how much you cared about poor people? Well, there was, as they say, they have been able to find nothing that the Clintons have done out in the land, in the areas where the people suffered and lost all their housing. Instead, they built a business park in the north where the destruction had not even occurred. Anyway, here's CNN. And this is Jake Tapper.
Welcome back to Lead. Staying with politics now, U.S. State Department emails released today, obtained via the Freedom of Information Act by the Republican National Committee, seem to show officials from the U.S. State Department under Secretary Clinton giving preferential treatment to Clinton Foundation donors and, quote, friends of Bill, who sought to provide aid after the Haiti earthquake in 2010. ABC News, which was first to report this, talked to analysts who said that Clinton and the Clinton Foundation clearly seem to blur the lines between the State Department and her husband's foundation. Jake Johnson, a Haiti analyst at the nonpartisan Center for Economic and Policy Research, described the relationship this way. Quote, you had a lot of coordination between the two, obviously, and I think that raises significant questions about how they were both operating. To talk about this and other matters, let's bring in the panel CNN political commentator S.E. Cupp, CNN political commentator and Hillary Clinton supporter Hillary Rosen, plus CNN political commentator and USA Today columnist Kirsten Power. Hillary, without question, the goals of a lot of these people pouring into Haiti after that devastating earthquake was to help the people of Haiti. But there were.
So why weren't they helped? Here is ABC News' devastating report on Clinton corruption in Haiti. They did not give the money to the Haitians, and they didn't build anything. So what happened to the money?
The UN special envoy to Haiti, and she was the Secretary of State.
We believed in Haiti's promise.
And together, the Clintons played prominent roles after the earthquake, as for-profit companies and aid organizations rushed in to be part of a $10 billion reconstruction program. Now, new emails between the State Department and the Clinton Foundation, obtained by Clinton's Republican opponents, appear to show that those considered FOB, friend of Bill, or using their initials, WJCHRC friends, got special attention from the State Department. Need you to flag when people are friends of WJC, wrote one State Department official to her counterpart at the Clinton Foundation in one of the emails provided to ABC News.
When you look at the records, people who have been contributors to the foundation or have been close with the Clintons who have benefited from reconstruction in Haiti.
The State Department says its only goal was trying to figure out who could best get aid to quake victims as soon as possible. But even before last week's hurricane, we found tens of thousands of people still living in what was a temporary shelter.
Do you think you'll have a permanent home at some point?
No.
And while the emails do not indicate who did or did not get a contract in Haiti, they do show what happened to those without a connection to the Clintons. Is this FOB? Asked the State Department official of the foundation. If not, they should go to a public website clearinghouse. The foundation told ABC News no special treatment was expected or given in Haiti, or anywhere, says the president.
Nothing was ever done for anybody because they were contributor to the foundation. Nothing.
One of the biggest beneficiaries of the Clinton reconstruction efforts in Haiti was a Korean garment company recruited to this new industrial park, built at a cost of some $400 million, including almost $175 million in U.S. taxpayer money. The company called Seiya, one of the world's largest garment manufacturers, now has some 9,000 workers in Haiti and proudly shows off the two local schools it built nearby. But the company was selected despite a track record of worker abuse and sexual harassment in Guatemala. Company officials told us those were isolated instances.
We've seen the record. This company has a history of that.
That is not something he's aware of.
I want to thank Chairman Kim and Seiya for many things.
Seiya later became a Clinton Foundation donor and is chairman has since helped finance a private business for top Clinton aide Cheryl Mills, who was instrumental in bringing the company to Haiti.
Now, Cheryl Mills is at the very center of this whole thing, and she's going to become a millionaire through her business connections. Here's a little bit, Clinton stealing gold in Haiti.
Flowing in these remote rivers may be the answer to Haiti's economic woes. A bike ride along dirt roads leads to what could be more than $20 billion worth of gold and other precious minerals. It's a secret that locals in northern Haiti have known for generations, and they don't want it to get out.
Since I was a kid, I have been panning for gold. I don't want any company to come here and take our gold away. Gold is my life.
The women show us the river they pan in, but we're worried that we would reveal the location to a mining company. Several foreigners have offered to pay them over the last year to drill on their land.
After 6 days of panning for gold, these women earn about $100, which is more than enough to feed their families. Mining has been a way of life here for centuries for these people, and they want it to stay that way.
So far, Canadian and American mining companies have invested more than $30 million collecting samples, building roads, and digging. Nearly 15% of Haiti's territory is now under license to North American mining firms.
Don't have enough time to play the rest of this, but guess who is in control of that mine? It is Hillary Clinton's brother. Can you believe that? Anyway, we'll take a break here. The corruption just never ends with these people. 523-1450 to call in. 805-6180. Well, I guess the texture isn't here, but AM Los Cruces the same, 1450. We'll be back. All right, so a lot has been coming out during this campaign. It is surreal to try to figure out what's going on out there. I think it would be fair to say, though, as it was stated by the gentleman that wrote the article, that there is a coup de, I'm calling it a coup de grace, but it's a popular coup. It's an overthrow. Coup de grace, obviously, the end of the story, but it is a coup d'etat, a popular coup done through the media who are not going to let Trump get elected. So let's just say these were two different people. You could plug in any two people that you wanted into this race, you know, Reagan versus Jimmy Carter or whoever. If the media is totally in the tank for Jimmy Carter, does Reagan get elected? No. I mean, obviously not. So, I mean, at one point, you know, Reagan was significantly behind Carter, despite the fact that, like right now, we were struggling as a result of the application of liberal policies and a lot of bad decision-making. And as you recall, in those days, it was stagflation. Unemployment and inflation together were devastating America. When Reagan came in, he changed the marginal tax rate, which is the tax rate that applies to individual citizens, and ended up taking it down about halfway, and we had one of the greatest economic revivals in the history of the United States that lasted for about 20 years. And now we have gone through 8 years of underperforming economics, and we're being told by these people that that's just the state of it. is that that's just how economics worked. We're not in the days of Reagan anymore. We're in the middle of, you know, the time of Obama. So instead of looking at policies that might be harming the economy, these people are just suggesting that it's the times that we live in. And okay, so let me get into this thing. I'm just going to throw this thing out there for you. We can talk about it or not. I'll talk about it a little bit. I just want you guys to think about this. There was a book written by a guy by the name of Alasdair MacIntyre, who's Scottish. And it was considered to be one of the most important books written in, say, the last 50 years. And it was called After Virtue. And in this book, he talked about the state of debate and argument, and I guess ideas or ideology that we're stuck in now. And he said, you know, you've got more than one claim of how you explain the world. And so, for example, there's one that's Catholic. There's another one, I guess, that would be Protestant. But there's another one that would be, you know, in the Catholic and Protestant model have a lot of overlap. But it's the Western view of things. In the West, we've had a certain view of life it's been relatively consistent for the last, say, 2,000 years. And it's time we've built up, you know, in the first 1,000 years, there was, you know, the universities didn't exist. And so we were kind of building prosperity and expanding the amount of arable land in Europe, kind of building up in the direction that we're today, capitalistic, you know, a lot of great theorizing was done in capitalism, in government theory, in law, and we built up what is now the modern world. But one of the things that MacIntyre says is that there's this other way of seeing things, which is, I'll boil it down for you. Well, let's just call it a Western view versus Marxism. And in these debates, there's never any common ground because the definitions of good and bad are so different. So you see on one side the capitalist and the Republican, the Democrat / Republican view of things, people who are in favor of popular representation, popular democracy as we live in, and republicanism, all the institutions that we have that are in our country, many of which have arisen under their own power. We see those people arguing that you've got to have capitalistic growth, and it's not greedy to want your economy to grow and for your society to become ever more prosperous. Now, on the other side, you've got people who claim that capitalism is evil, that growth is bad, that democracy is dangerous, that republicanism is perverted, and that the government needs a great deal of control of the society to force people to do what they're supposed to. Now, in the other way of seeing things, the purpose of government, according to John Locke, who's kind of the great hero of this way of life, says the purpose of government is to increase men and women's freedom. So you get the development of free speech, freedom of religion, the freedom to own weapons to defend yourself, civil and criminal rights, a legal system that is the envy of the world, and an educational system to drive all of this. So we used to have an admirable educational system at the bottom, or in the elementary and high school level. We don't have that anymore. Why we don't have that anymore is a show unto itself. But we still have the greatest university system in the world, but that is itself is under attack from this other direction. What the people on the left want is total control of of society. They want to force people to save the planet against global warming. They want to downsize capitalism and turn it into socialism. They want totally open borders. They want one, you know, what you would associate with the Tower of Babel, one language, one currency, leadership by enlightened bureaucrats. That's what all these globalists want. And the people on the right see or believe that you can only control the land that you're in. You can only exert control over that, and that it's important for nations to grow up because nations are different, and a nation can control its border. It can protect its people, but once you throw the borders open totally, there would be no way to protect everybody, right? Because you would have so many people coming into this country to get what they've been told is their right, which is to be American citizens and to take part in our life. So you've got these two ways of seeing things. And I was talking to you about this the other day. In this Marxist way of seeing things, and Marxism is just a broad term to kind of sum up the left's ideas, because Marx is like the most important writer. You don't have individual rights in Marxism. The society has rights. There is no God. The government takes the place of God. You don't have a right to capitalism, to have a capitalist enterprise, because the government has the right to direct and really to own everything. And it is the government's job to make sure everybody is saved. But any particular decision or action or statement that is meant to amalgamate, to bring together power, to create the state is acceptable, because the Bible is false. Biblical morality or Western morality is out the window. It's not wrong to tell a lie. It's not wrong to lie, cheat, or steal, because what you're doing is you're building on the most important thing in history, and that's to save humanity through liberalism, to build a super state so that everybody can have health care, everybody can be protected, have, you know. And the right sees that totally differently. Individuals have the right to make decisions on their lives and decide what they will do for a living and how they will express their freedom. They can amass wealth and do with the wealth whatever they want. And so it is a very scary battle that we see being played out here. On the one side is Hillary Clinton, the ultimate status quo and far left candidate, who said that she's going to radically increase taxes and open the borders. That alone is going to destroy who we used to be. Now, the people on the right, those who support Trump, there are many people on the right in the middle who've been tricked into supporting Hillary because she's the only acceptable choice. They don't see what an existential threat she poses right now. Once she gets into office, just think of the impact of increasing Syrian refugees in this country by 500%. What are these people going to do here? What's behind the idea that we need to flood America with foreigners, whether legal or illegal? What's the purpose? What is the expected outcome? What is the inevitable outcome? You've got the people that are supporting Trump, and is Trump a perfect candidate? No. Is he a good candidate? I guess we'll find out. But he is fighting for the old way of seeing things. So it's a battle between two, I guess you'd call it worldviews, or two theories. Only one can win. And on the one side, you've got a group of people who will do anything to attain and maintain power, anything. And nothing is wrong, because they're fighting for the truth. They have one truth, and that's Marxism or leftism or liberalism. There is no God, and they have the only truth. The only way things occur in this world is through politics. Politics is just power. On the opposite side are a tremendous number of humble people who would believe in God. They would believe in individual rights, and they're kind of overwhelmed. They don't understand, because we're not any longer an intellectually vital country. So it becomes harder and harder for people to understand what the individuals who oppose them believe in. So they can't take seriously this idea that the country is going to be destroyed. And then some of these people are getting pulled away to the other side because they're being misinformed. They're being misinformed about the nature of the battle. They think the people that are on the right or in the middle, or maybe conservative Democrats, believe that they're fighting against a guy that's rude or a guy that's kind of crazy. And they're doing the right thing because America can't accept someone who's rude or talks off the top of his head. In the meantime, the left actually knows what's going on because they've had a plan for this for a long time, and they really can't believe their luck. Between getting Obama in there and now Hillary, it's a 1-2 punch, and they expect America to be down for the count. And when America begins to rise again, it's going to be a totally different place, and they will be able to build an international system, because America is really the only country that has pushed back against that on a regular basis. 720 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and we'll be back. A little more Dave Brubeck. All right, so let's see what I want to do here. Since I've been getting into this, I'll do some New Mexico news in a minute, but here is a clip from Marxism in America, retired Lieutenant General Boykin. I wouldn't put this on, but I think it's so important. You've got to understand the times that we're living in. We are being subverted from within. If you think about all of the changes that have occurred, all of the radical changes, and we simply don't care about what we used to care about, which used to be considered to be radically important, we laugh at. Let me just give you one example. 50 years ago, approximately, there was a general consensus that sex outside of marriage was wrong. And because of that, children who were born outside of wedlock were called bastards. I don't know since I didn't live at that time, whether they were called that to their face or behind their back or just noted that way. And it would have seemed to have been an injustice because they had nothing to do with the facts of their birth, their creation. But what it did was it put out a clear message that if you're going to have a kid out of wedlock, there's going to be a social cost. And from that time till now, the radical changes within just procreation and marriage and sex and everything have been so drastic. And with porn and the change in just the mores, the values, we've reached the point where it's totally irrelevant who you sleep with, who you're married to, who you're not married to, who you're having an affair. These type of things don't really affect anything anymore. And if a woman wants to bring home a new guy every night for 10 years in a row, the neighbors do not have a right to look at her or talk about her. But, and we developed along that period of time a way for the government to support these kids because it's not their fault, right? But there's broad license that's been released out there. Now, whether you agree with this world, I would say most people are now somewhat indifferent. Older people would still probably have a hard time believing in the change. But what has been the impact? Forget about the morality for a minute. Whether it's religious or societal, common sense, whatever, throw the morality out the window. Because this is not a moral argument. The impact upon the society has been so large, I don't think we will ever really come to grips with it. Because what you've done is open the door to the notion that a family is a mom and a child. And there's nothing wrong with a father living with a mother having a kid, whether they're married or not. But that's what a family is. And that idea has been bought into broadly across the United States because now more than half of children are born out of wedlock. Now, 50 years ago, that number was probably 5%. I'll have to look it up. But the number one measure or the number one creator or factor in poverty is coming out of a single parent or let's just say a single mother family. For whatever reason, I could break that down for you. But in addition, the amount of dysfunction, both mental and emotional, financial, institutional, and many other factors, this is like pouring gasoline on dysfunction. To be raised without a father means that you're going to have a harder life. You're going to have a missing role model, but what's missing out of the family is the person who lays down, creates and lays down the law. The mother has to do that. Now look at the black communities that now have about 72-75% of children born out of wedlock. What is their society like? High unemployment, high poverty, large amounts of drug use and crime compared to the other sectors of society. I would argue that it has nothing to do with genetics, of course. It is a reflection and is caused by lack of fathers in that community. That one thing leads to everything else. A tremendous problem with authority if you grow up without a father. And just miserable lives growing up without knowing who your father was. Being in a household with the children of different men, trying to make a family out of that. That's just one example. Now, that has decreased the GDP, the gross domestic product. It has increased the number of people in prison. It has increased the number of people in institutions, mental health institutions. It's increased crime. That is one effect of what I'm talking about here. And you could go and find many, many, many different examples. That's what we're fighting about here. You can change anything you want in society, but Are you, if you're willing, really willing to accept the consequences, we'll take a break here and come back. AM Las Cruces, same 1450-523-1450 to call in on KOBE. We are in the fight of our lives, and it looks like we're going to lose right now. That's why everybody's got to get involved. This is not between Trump and Hillary. This is between having a society with some standards and independence and freedom in it versus another approach to society in which the government decides what's right and wrong and then forces the conclusions on you through the law and through social engineering, through things like political correctness. All right, so going through, and it says 7:35. Thanks for tuning in. Going through some of these stories, while U.S. graduation rate increases, New Mexico is lagging, and New Mexico is second to last at 68.6% graduation rate, just barely edging out District of Columbia, which is 68.5%. So a Building a Grad Nation report released in May reported that New Mexico had the worst graduation rate in the country, in large part because of its large population. Sorry if I missed your call, but to call back. In large part because of its large population of English language learners who are graduating at under 64%. And 40% of New Mexico high schools were graduating less than 67% of their students. A bad showing matched only by Alaska. So That's very, very disappointing. Now, here's a little more news that's disappointing. New Mexico has the highest percentage of young children on food stamps. So I want to ask you this. What would it take for New Mexico to take the leap forward to start getting out of some of these terrible statistics? How do we grow our economy? How do we get more families and kids committed to graduating high school? How do we make life better in the state? I think you can't have a good life if people are living off the government. You can never really have any wealth or any independence, you know, any sense of security. So New Mexico has the nation's largest percentage of young children receiving food stamps. Nearly half of children age 4 and under are participating in SNAP, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. And SNAP's also known as food stamps, and it's the largest provider of nutrition assistance to children in poor families nationwide. In New Mexico, almost 200,000 children receive SNAP benefits, according to a report released this week from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And we do have a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for calling in. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Hey, you kind of touched on a little point there, is that, you know, you're saying New Mexico is the lowest and all these things and everything else. But, you know, it brings me up to the point that's been made several times where, I guess, politicians in the area are saying that we are a zero growth and they expect us to have zero growth. And that's what they want.
Yeah.
I think politicians that speak that way should be thrown out.
I agree.
The reason I'm saying that.
I agree.
And the reason I'm saying that is because if any politician or anybody saying that they should have zero growth in this area, that's basically telling me that they want our kids to grow up, get an education, and then leave to go somewhere else, somewhere where there's actually growth happening.
Right.
So my thing is that those guys that are saying that we should have zero growth, they should be identified, and we should actually be throwing them out of the office. That's either
right.
That or maybe when it comes down to, they don't know how to grow the economy.
Well, I don't know if you heard what I was talking about earlier, but the difference between these two worldviews, I didn't really finish that thought. I moved on to something else, but we can't communicate between one another because our values are so different. And so one group says economic growth is important and we need it to have basic standards for our economy, for wealth, for getting people off of food stamps, that type of thing. The other group says capitalism is evil. We need to fight against the evil. We need to all sacrifice and make the economy stronger smaller so we don't destroy the earth. It's like people from speaking two different languages.
Well, anybody who comes back and says that we have to have zero growth or they don't want to grow the economy, then that means that we're going to need to get to the point where we have zero population growth.
Well, that's effectively the impact of it, because like you say, a couple of years ago, we had 300 job growth in 1 year. How can we graduate thousands of kids everywhere from NMSU and not know and, you know, not expect them to leave the area?
They're going to leave the area because there's no jobs here.
And it breaks up families. There's a lot of people in this town that value families over pretty much everything, and you're breaking those families up.
Yeah, like I said, if a politician or those guys out there, if they're saying zero growth in the area, then they should go somewhere where there's zero growth.
That's
Iceland or something. I don't know.
Ken Miyagashima, from what I understand, he's never said it to me, but from I had a number of people, or at least a handful of people, who said that he told them this is a no growth area.
Yeah, and being Hispanic, you know, you don't come and say, oh, you know what, my total family is 100 people, and therefore 10 years from now, my total family should still be 100 people.
Right.
That's not right.
Well, it's
anyway,
it's like anything else. If it doesn't grow, it dies.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct. Anyway, I think they should be they should leave the area or get out of office and let somebody else go in there and do the right job.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, stop hobbling us. Thanks for the call, Jesse. Have a good day. All right, folks. I'm not saying that about Ken. I've just been told by a couple of people who didn't know each other that he had told him that. And I was shocked at first. And then I just realized that there's a number of politicians out there that seem on the surface to be very, very reasonable and very, you know, if they're to the left, they're moderately to the left. And then underneath, they're raging Marxists. I mean, why do you think Mayor Ken signed us up into ICLEA, which is the political wing of Agenda 21? Why do you think that the county commission against the will of the people is trying to change the zoning rules on land and has got this 20-year plan out there? Why do you think the county commission spends $14,000 a day on a bus ghost fleet when we're I mean, this is the poorest county in the country, just about. And we have to do that? I mean, it's people who are so baked into their opinion, they don't have any common sense left. 743, Kelly O'Connell. Just my opinion. 523-1450. Big kisses to you, Billy Garrett and Ken. Nothing personal. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. All right. As I said, the machines are getting worked on, so all right, let me continue on with this poverty in New Mexico. Overall, 39% of New Mexico children age 17 and younger receive SNAP benefits. Only Mississippi and Washington, D.C. have higher rates. This hasn't fluctuated since 2011. And nationwide, 12% less, 27% of children age 17 and younger receive these benefits. New Mexico Human Services Department, which administers SNAP, is chronically understaffed, resulting in a U.S. District Court consent decree to improve its efficiency in providing SNAP and Medicaid benefits to those who are eligible. Now, a gentleman or lady, I don't know which, Sovereign Hager, I would assume maybe a guy, who names their kid Sovereign? Maybe a coin collector, you know, coins that are called Sovereigns. Anyway, Sovereign Hager, an attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty called SNAP, our most efficient and effective tool to combat hunger. I will challenge this right here. You know what the most efficient and effective tool to combat hunger is? Having a job. And this is not to look down on anybody who's unemployed because of forces beyond their control, but give me a break here. You know, these people that are in love with the welfare state, they don't know what a miserable lives they're creating, and all of these people that are trying to subsist off government help. And I know that there's, for the lowest paid workers in this county, I take my hat off to you, because there's probably a lot of people on state aid that are making off better than you, and maybe many of them working under the table as well. But the way to deal with an effective and efficient tool to combat hunger is having a job. Especially, imagine having a job in a restaurant. You can work and eat. Nationwide, more than 80% of SNAP households with children have a gross income below the 2016 federal poverty level of $20,000 a year. And all right, so I say cut welfare in half and use that one half that you've cut out to train and allow small loans for people. Train in capitalism, train people how to open a business, and then use that the rest of the money to allow loans or even grants. Get people off welfare. That's how you make their lives better. Kelly O'Connell, 749. We'll take one last break here and come back. And I've got something on illegal immigration you might find interesting. All right, just a few minutes left, but just to take a look at immigration now. In this year alone, apprehensions by Border Patrol in New Mexico have surged to 18,500 people in the 11 months through August, compared with 11,216 in 2015. So we are up, I would say, 30%. Now, a few years ago, it was only 5,000. So it's triple what it used to be in 2011. Now, of this group, 7,900, about 8,000 of the immigrants apprehended in Mexico this year were classified by Border Patrol as other than Mexican, mostly from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Brazil. Brazil has been going through a very dramatic drop in the economy. So of the crossers, a big motivation is to leave a crime-ridden area, and it's a lot safer on this side of the border than the other, of course. But the desert around Deming, a hotbed for illegal traffic 10 years ago, and this is from Albuquerque Journal, is quiet. Backpackers carrying loads of marijuana make up most of the illegal crossings in the Boot Hill, while the area around Sunland Park and Santa Teresa have had a rush of Central American and Brazilian migrants, dozens per day. And apprehensions of family units begin climbing again this year, nearly doubling to 68,000 border wide. So, and for many of these people, getting across means getting into a court system that can't really handle them. So it's not going to get any better. Now, Hillary plans to have an open border. You might say, well, I'm going to fight against that. But how exactly would you fight against it, you know? Has anybody stopped Obama from doing this? These are these, you know, federal decisions that can be made by a president, even if he's breaking the law and the federal court said that he was doing things that were illegal. I'm going to ask you this because once you've studied Marxism and communism and the development of this theory and practice in Eastern Europe and in China, you see the proliferation of it around the world. You can never look at anything done by these people again and think it was a coincidence. They're willing to sacrifice everything they have for their ideals, which is like some cult, right? Or maybe it's like a Christian missionary. Somebody sticks a gun to his head and says, deny Jesus. And he says, no. So you've got thousands of journalists out there that are willing to take on the appearance and the quality of being totally biased because they're fighting for what they believe in, the only thing they know, which is leftism, socialism. Why are they doing it? Because somehow they've been brainwashed into thinking that they're saving the earth. Now, no person would come out of communist China or Russia and say the people that were running those places were saving the earth, saving humanity. They were in there killing people and destroying the earth. But because these fables, these fairy tales are so deeply planted into people when they're young, or they develop a infatuation when they get older and they think they're good people, it's two different languages. You can't convert these people because they don't listen to you. They don't listen to you because they're not interested in facts or a logical discussion. They want to save the earth. They bought into this romantic idea of the revolutionary who comes along and saves the earth, and they think they're going to have a part in this. And they're so dumb, they're so disconnected from reality, they don't know they're destroying everything good in the West and therefore are going to put the planet under slavery. Anyway, 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. Had a great time with you this morning. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell.